Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
And my name is Pat.
No Wayne.
Yeah, no Wayne, just the three of us. Chris got scared, so he's... Yeah, there was another old man under his bed.
It was really a mirror, don't tell him. He's like, what is that hideous old beast?
We were just talking about why I prefer D20 revised Star Wars to Saga.
Believe me, it was a scintillating conversation.
It was deep. All right. But do have a couple announcements here we want to give. Sojourn Volume 2 is up for sale. I will put all the links to it in the show notes. This time we have a book that is roughly twice the size of the prior book. In fact, I think a little more than twice the size of the prior book.
Are you going to go for three times the size?
No. There is a point we got to cut this off. I mean, don't worry. We want a big book. I just
Sojourn Volume 10, the Palette Edition.
The Tolkien Edition. But no, we got a good solid book here. A lot of returning authors from the first one. I believe all of them but one returned. One had other engagements and wasn't able to do this, but all but one returned. Plus, we got a bunch of new authors, including some industry names like Eddie Webb is in this one. Mm-hmm. And so I hope you'll pick a copy of that up. And the book opens up with a very important piece of literature, Gnarl Saves Christmas. And that's what leads off the book. So if you want to read about Gnarl saving Christmas in the form of an intentionally terrible poem.
Oh, and by the way, you asked me to dig up the couple of notes that I had on our game that Gnarl was in.
Yeah.
So that you can get that. I found that notebook.
Do you remember what the name of the town was?
It's in the notebook.
Okay. We have to look in the notebook and let me know. Yes. All right. Now, speaking of Gnarl, there's something else. And this is a much more whimsical announcement. Mm-hmm. I made a post on my Facebook and Twitter feeds, my personal ones, not the Fear the Boot ones, a couple of days ago saying I should start a feed for my fursona.
And what's a sona?
Fursona.
Oh, fursona.
Fursona.
My first sona.
No, fursona.
Fursona.
Fursona's not with a
that's
fursona.
Like Shadow Run?
If someone's a furry and feels they have an alternate personality or a side of them or whatever, it's more animalistic, instead of a persona, they call that the fursona.
Wow.
So I just made a joke about starting up a feed for my fursona, even though I don't really have one. And someone,
you too. Shut up.
Someone in there said,
quit trying to deflect.
Someone in there. So I found a way to mask it. But someone in there said that I should give Gnarl his own feed. And I did it. So I went ahead and created a Twitter feed for Gnarl. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I think I have to find the right comedic voice for it. But if you want to ask Gnarl a question or ask him opinions on current events or hot topic issues, you know, hot button issues, I'll put that link in the show notes so you can get out there and see what he has to say on the very important things in our world from a deep and knowledge perspective. But I'll put that in the show notes and also links to Sojourn, too. I really do hope you pick a copy up. It's a great book. I'm really excited to get that out there, and I'm really proud of this. Do you care to share?
I'm thinking of inappropriate things to ask Gnarl.
Well, do it. Get a Twitter feed and ask him.
Okay.
Doggy style?
Question mark? No, he talked to Sarah at length about running.
That's true. We did.
Yeah, because to them, it's not a pleasure thing. So
yeah, and Sarah was fascinated. It's like, you don't enjoy rutting.
Yeah.
Why do it?
They do the real doggy style.
Yeah.
It's true. It was horrifying to me. I was like, what do you mean you don't enjoy sex? My God, it's like it's a godless universe. There's no dog.
It's like taking a dump. You know, the need comes up. You take care of it, kind of feel good in doing so. But it's not like, you know, you don't like sit there on the toilet hoping for the moment.
Oh, I do.
All right, so
I like sex too.
Our topic for this here bonus episode, Chad brought one up of rapping about
rap.
Rapping, yeah,
rapping about rap.
I'm so talking about rap songs to start with. Okay,
yeah.
Talking here about wargaming. Now we have a somewhat diverse crew on this, even though three of us, because. Well, I guess let's just get into it. All right, so let's start with Pat.
Pat, I think, has the most hardline opinion on wargaming. It's not just coming from someone who doesn't do it. I just hate wargaming, and I don't understand it.
Pat, did you ever play 40K or Warhammer Fantasy? I know you played War Machine.
No, I didn't. As far as war games go, tabletop wargaming, the only one I played was War Machine. That was enough to kill it for me forever. So,
but you used to love it.
I did. Well, when I first got into it, I was initially sucked into it, and I have an obsessive personality. I do when I play something, when I get interested in something, I become obsessed with it, obsessive about playing it. You know, war games, computer games, MMOs. I have that type of mentality that the companies hope for.
You're all
in. You know, I said, yeah, I'm all in. And that's so that's what happened.
When we first met you, you even talked to because we were playing.
Well, that's how we met. That's how I met Chad in the first place. I did not know you before
War Machine.
Before War Machine. Yeah. And I met you through Dave.
Yes.
I think at the Fantasy Shop. Mm-hmm.
Dave and I, we wanted to put together a gaming group and we were standing around and Dave is or slash was, if you still listen, Dave, hey, thanks, a Fear the Boot listener. And War Machine kind of came out and I forgot why, but I went to a War Machine event or maybe I saw some people playing or maybe Dave reached out to me. I forget the reason why, right? Because I don't think I really knew Dave that well or maybe not even at all. But anyway, for reasons that are now forgotten,
mm-hmm.
I started playing War Machine, and Dave and I became friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave, who is just an excellent War Machine player, or at least he was, I don't think he plays anymore, he showed me the ropes, he played my first game with me, or he sort of ran it for me with another guy, and he kind of showed me the ropes, and it was really fun. And then Dave and I got to talking and we became more friends. And then we were like, you know what? Neither of us have a role-playing game group right now. We should make a role-playing game group. And we're like, kind of, who do we know? He knew Josh. He knew you.
Yeah.
And you had gamed with him before, hadn't you?
Yes, because Josh and I were gaming. And then I forget
so
how I
fuzzy.
I know it is. I think I met Dave through Josh.
Yeah.
Josh and I were role playing in another group, role playing with my friend in Springfield. That was at the time it was in Columbia. I'm pretty sure that was when that was.
This
and then,
is all role playing gossip, not tabletop war.
Yeah. Okay. But it all goes to a point. It's eventually going to come to the point where I say that Dave is a horrible human being.
Okay. Well, now that that's on the table.
Pat and I's view of tabletop role-playing games is sort of intertwined.
Yeah.
But you really enjoyed tabletop role-playing games.
Tabletop war games.
War games.
Yeah, war games.
I'm sorry. Tabletop war games.
Right. And I did. When I first got involved with it, I liked it for the, you know, just for the sheer engineering aspect that there is. You know, and the tabletop strategy, this, that, and the other. It was a great little thing. And War Machine was good in the fact... in the fact that it was simpler than Warhammer. You know, I know that, and I've never played it, but I know that Warhammer was wild. Is like, there's a lot more to it. And they tried the whole,
very different.
One of the things that they were doing with War Machine was simple it down, keep it fast and easy.
I don't know if I'd say War Machine is any simpler than 40K, but what
it
I would
started
say,
simpler. It's well, not anymore.
But more than
or
that,
whatever.
It's smaller scale.
Yeah.
If you play War Machine, depending on what units you use, you could put a dozen units on the table and have an army.
Yeah. Yes.
Unless you have a really cheese army, you cannot do that in 40K. In 40K, 12 units are one squad.
Right.
That might be 200 points out of a 2,000-point army.
So, so you just the scale. I mean, they scaled it down. Well, you know, and so that made
it's
it more
faster.
I think it made it more accessible to a lot more people,
yeah.
I think, because
it
of that.
It played faster as well, yeah. Being smaller scale.
I could carry my entire army in one case.
Yeah.
My good, nice, I have plenty of stuff to play with army in one
case. Right. It also played in a smaller area, because I believe the War Machine...
48 by 48.
It's a 4 foot by 4 foot, whereas Warhammer is 4 foot by 8 feet.
Yeah. Isn't it a pool table?
Thereabouts.
Or a ping pong table
or
something
like that? It's thereabouts. Yeah. It's 4 foot by 8 foot. And you have a 12-inch starting zone for each side with 24 inches between, which most units cannot fire across that distance. Some can, but most can't. And so it's played in literally half the space that a Warhammer battle requires.
Yes. And first, I really did enjoy it, and it was a lot of fun. But it just, with anything, it just, you know, there was the creep factor. Things got bigger and bigger. And just like with any, you know, product, it didn't stay simple for long. You know, the game itself started adding things and doing this, that, and the other. And I mean, there were many reasons why I loathe it now, but one of the chief things was that I quit the game when they came out with their second edition or whatever they called it, because it was basically, we've got all this we've released 4 or 5 different rule books now, and now we're going to change everything. And the most maddening thing that they did, this is the thing that the straw that broke camel's back for me, was they had just released the last rule book that they were going to release for the first edition that had all these units and these and some new rules and all this kind of thing in there. And then literally like a month later, something ridiculous, they wiped the slate clean and released the second edition.
You know what's funny is that 40K players are listening to this and going, "Oh, you sweet innocent
son of a child." Oh, I know.
One like
I
said, edition well, change.
I said I didn't play it.
But the crazy thing about that is one of War Machine's selling points was supposedly these guys were disaffected Warhammer players or writers or whatever, and they said, "Look, we're going to make a game that it plays smaller, cheaper, faster, and we're not going to do constant rule revisions. We're not going to constantly nerf and pull things in and out. We're not going to axe units and say, well, you can't use this unit or that weapon anymore." It's the idea is once you bought into it, things might get tweaked, but you weren't going to have to effectively scrap and rebuild, especially if you're really into the minutiae of the tactics.
Yeah, right.
It's my understanding that's what they ended
that's
up doing.
Exactly. They fell into the trap and did it. And the most, and
well, they like money.
The most, well, of course, the most maddening thing that they did for the players, though, is that at the switch between first and second edition, with the release of a book, always came a significant number of new units for every faction. And new units means you have to buy all this shit and you get the cards for them. And you had to have the cards to play. That's the other thing, is it was a card game.
Yeah.
And the fact that your cards had the stats on there for the units. So they released all this shit so that everybody had to buy it. And it was literally used for like, it was like for a month, because then they come out with second edition. All the cards that you have for first edition, worthless. Unless you're a holdout and you're going to say, "I'm going to play a classic first edition." If you're playing second edition, all your cards that you've got, the double, like triple size playing card deck of cards, you throw those in the trash. And now guess what you need to do? You've got to go to the company and you've got to buy their new decks of everything. So that's another money grab. And it's just like, you f***ers.
Yeah.
And that was it for me. I was done. I dropped it and I've never played it again. Is sitting in a corner of my base. I should have gotten rid of my army. I should have. I have a full bag full of Signar.
Away, I think.
And I should have gotten rid of it. I haven't. And that's fine. I'll keep it because I actually painted some of them and it was whatever. But
you know, I played
War Machine.
You're very bitter about
this. I am. I really am.
Yeah. I played several war games, and one of them I'm going to come to last because I think it's an interesting beast in and of itself. But I played War Machine.
Yep.
That was not the first one I played.
Are we counting Battletech?
That's the one I want to come back to, because I think Battletech is and is not.
Yeah.
Battletech, I think,
I agree. When we talk about it, because I love Battletech.
Yeah.
And I don't have a bad thing to say about it.
I want to talk about Battletech separately. But it was not the first game I played, but I did play War Machine with you guys. I was starting to grow fond of Kador. They weren't really the strategy I wanted, because all the War Machine armies, you had to be full tilt, all charge, all attack, all the time.
By design.
By design.
That was their motto.
Could not, for example,
play a defensive
bunker
armor.
Down. Yeah. And what bothered me about that was not per se that I won a game that's all about turtling, because that's not what I'm suggesting. But the tactics in the game were pretty singular.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty homogenous. I mean, you played this way, and all you got to pick in terms of style was how you're going to accomplish playing that way. And I'm sure there's people listening who say, well, wait a minute, if I pick this unit versus that unit and this build versus that, and I totally can see that. Yes, you can do a lot of diversity within that play style. But if you want to say, look, I want to bunker down with a hard point here and have some whip units out there, the units don't exist to do it, or at least they didn't when I was playing it. Because I asked multiple players, including some that were ranked at asinine levels, how do I do this? And their answer was always, you can't, you don't, you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I had fun playing it. I never got that much into it for the same reason I never got too deep into 40K. And I'll explain that in a second here, but to give my 40K story, that was the first tabletop war game I picked up, once again, not counting Battletech here. But I picked it up, I believe, in second edition when the Tyranid army had first been added, and the Tyranid were mixed with the Gene Stealer army.
Yeah.
Not just the purest strains, but you could actually have the hybrids, the Patriarch, the Magus, all that stuff. And so I had Tyranids out there alongside of these three-armed guys that were driving a Lehman Russ tank and all this other silliness. And they were really quality over quantity unit or army. And then I tried to pick it up again about fourth edition. So I played it a bunch with Tax. He was really the only person I played, because he went to some competitions and open play stuff. But the 40K scene here at that point in history, they were a bunch of dicks.
Yeah.
And they were looking.
They had a certain reputation.
They were looking to cheat every rule
they
could.
They still kind of do have a certain reputation.
Cheese every tactic they could. Yeah. They would get on you about the stupidest things, like, well, your army has to be painted with at least three colors, and they have to be consistent, and they have to match a unit in the book, and then that, you know, you can't just paint them however you want. It was ridiculous BS. So the only person I played was Tex. But you and I played each other quite a bit, and it was all right. And then I try to pick it up again about 4th edition. Well, the Tyranids got changed into what we call a push broom army, which is where you just dump your units on the field, and every turn you take a big old zookeeper's push broom, and you just push your units forward 6 inches, and that's your move. And they were complete.
You know what the scary thing is?
They were complete quantity over quality army. So I switched to playing Chaos because they were a quality over quantity army. And they also had units that really fit my tactics. They had big, tough units that could kind of fight on the defensive or at least counteroffensive. Mm-hmm. And they were great tactically, but I got sick of it because of the fact that I do not, one, have the money to spend on units that are only good for 12 to 18 months before they throw them out the window or change them so much I don't want to use them anyway. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I hate the modeling aspect.
Mm-hmm. I don't like painting. I don't like gluing. I don't like that.
And they made it harder.
I don't
harder.
Like the arts and crafts part
exactly.
of it.
And they made it harder because in second edition, most of the units had rectangular slots. So you take like an arm and it goes into a rectangular slot, put some glue in it, you're done. But in this edition, almost everything was ball and socket joints.
Because then you want people want to pose it.
Yeah, because people want to pose it. It was great for that.
Yeah.
But if you want to like glue it together, you know, the only thing that's stuck to is your fingers. And you sit there, and I'm not joking, I sit there to hold these units together with the correct glue, so don't even try and school me on that. I talked to the modelers.
Did you do any pinning?
Yeah,
did
well, that's, green glue? Man, I did about you... wanted to throw somebody through a wall on pinning. But I would sit there and hold the unit for 30 minutes and then take off my fingers, and the only thing glued to anything was my fingers.
Yeah.
And it just was so maddening. And that's when I'm like, what
some
is...
people really get into that. Some people, that's like a real zen
thing.
Well,
hold on, let me lose my mind here. So I'm not done yet. But so then I start bitching to some of the really hardcore 40K players I was associating with at the time, like Tim and Kevin. Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, that's not a big deal. You just need to pin it.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. First of all, the Tyranid have been changed to a quantity army.
Yeah.
So I have dozens and dozens and dozens of units.
Right.
Every one of these motherfuckers has 6 to 8 arms. And they're like, oh, it's not a big deal. You just have to drill a tiny hole into this side, then drill a tiny hole into that side, then push in the pin and put it on there. Like, how long does it take? Well, if I'm watching a TV show for 30 minutes, I can get a squad done. It's like 5 of my guys. Like, what the f-? And then it was like, oh, and then you got to paint and there's a base cut. I was like, I don't want to do this. I just want to play.
Well, yeah.
You can't just put the units out there, because if this is any kind of organized play, that's illegal. What?
Yeah.
It's illegal to have an unpainted unit, because an unpainted unit completely changes it. I mean, they told me it was against the rules to use alternate minis because of the fact that the line of sight and all that matter.
Yeah. If you have a guy who's really tall and he's got a big sword and he's like waving it around versus a guy who is hunched down, tiny little rattling guy who isn't sticking up. Yeah, there's a difference. There is a difference.
But painted versus unpainted does not do anything.
But you can't distinguish the units at a glance if they're not painted.
Distinguish these nuts at a glance.
Exactly.
And so I just couldn't deal with it. Yeah. And people are like, oh, go buy an army on eBay. It's like, no, because then I got to use whatever it is they did. And on top of that, what happens when this thing becomes obsolete? Yeah. Or maybe it's already obsolete. They have units, but the units are outdated.
It is. That's why they're selling it on eBay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Or maybe they're still legal, but this weapon doesn't do what it used to do. And so it's really not that great anymore.
Mm.
This is why these games need to stop being physical and go to computer. You can do all of this on a computer.
The video game, single video game, I have put more hours into than any other video game I've ever owned.
Leisure Suit Larry?
Yes.
Yes.
Including World of Warcraft.
That would be Wayne. Wayne is a huge.
Is he really? Now?
Is
huge. Leisure
the original
Suit
Dawn of War.
Mm.
The 40K video game. The original Dawn of War. Well, I say original is to distinguish it from Dawn of War 2. I did have the expansions like Winter Assault, Dark Crusade, Soulstorm. But I have put somewhere between 300 or 400 hours total into that game. And I know that because I think I have over 200 hours in it on Steam. And I had that game before Steam existed. And I was playing it off the DVDs or CDs or whatever it was. But I love that game. And I'm interested by the same stroke in trying out the War Machine computer game that just came out. Because you get the feel of the game without having to do the modeling, without having to worry about things getting nerfed or buffed or made illegal or added to the game. You know, it's just it's the price of the game.
Yeah.
And you're done. And I can get a full video game for the cost of one squad in 40K.
That reminds me of this review I read on Civilization on Steam. It said, I've only played a little bit, but I think I like it for Civ 5. It says hours played 2,500.
That is the truth. That's what these games do.
Yeah.
You know, Civilization, because I played Civ back way back when I was still in school. I don't remember which version it
probably
was.
Probably the original.
It may have been the original. I loved it. It was great, but I'm like, it was that. Those were especially insidious because there's nowhere to stop.
Yeah.
You know, in Civilization, you're like, well, I'll just play this next turn or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you get through it and then, it's another turn. There's just no good place to stop. And then you end up, you know, you've played all night and, you know, it's the next day and you have class in 10 minutes and you're wearing your boxers. And it's like, oh shit, I didn't even sleep. I was playing Civ.
I have 776 hours on Civ 5 right now, which is 36 days, I think.
Yeah.
36 days, which is not totally accurate because there have been times where it's like move, it's the weekend, I'm gonna take a nap, and then I sleep for an hour and then I go make lunch and I'm like, oh yeah,
god, it's, you know, I would love to know how many hours I put into, like, you know, the MMOs and stuff like that. I have no idea.
And although, wow, you could tell.
And wow, it does tell you, doesn't it?
I think it tells you in months, days, weeks, yes, hours, minutes, true. And that's really depressing. So back to tabletop.
All right. There's one in there that Chad, you and I played for a while and loved that we didn't mention, which is Necromunda.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Necromunda was great because
Tim and I won a Necromunda tournament.
It was campaign oriented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the battles.
I got a Zippo lighter.
Battles tied into each other. You had units that could be hired or fired and would evolve from battle to battle. So your gang was a gang war game based on the 40K universe. And so that actually mattered.
Do you know that they're... Have you ever heard of Mordheim?
Yes, I have.
It's like the sort of pre-Necromunda. It's their Warhammer fantasy version of...
Yeah.
Necromunda is the 40K version of Mordheim, because that one came first. They're making a Mordheim video game.
Are they?
Yes.
See, I would re-pick up Necromunda as a tabletop game if they ever released it.
Yes.
Or I want to say, so I might go buy an old copy of it or something. But the thing
is... I play Necromunda.
Yeah, because I love it. Because, you know, you had persistent play. You could have role play if you wanted to between, because there's negotiations or territories and such. And you played with a very small army. Your army typically consisted of about 8 to 12 guys. Mm-hmm. And one of the great things about it was they did have hacks where you could actually tie it into 40K itself, because the units in Mordheim compared to 40K standard units, I mean, they're gangbangers, so they weren't that powerful. But for example, if you wanted to do something like a Gene Stealer cult that actually had a pure strain on a leash, there were rules for that. Now, your army might be two guys with a Gene Stealer on a leash, but nonetheless, you could point that in and play that.
The thing I hated about Necromunda, and I, like I said, I played a tournament of Necromunda that went on for a while, and Tim and I were both in it, and I've told this story before. We did really, really well in the tournament till the end battle with our armies was he and I facing off against each other. When it came time to do the fight, because we drove each other to this thing, and we had started it together, and we had come up together, and we were really good friends, and we just looked across at each other, and we said, we both concede, and we shook each other's hands. So we both lost, and we both won it. And so the prize was $50 in store credit, and we split that down the middle. He had 25, and I had 25. The thing that I didn't like about Necromunda, and I enjoyed it, I really did enjoy it. In fact, I would totally play it again right now, was that you had 5 to 10 guys, maybe, depending on your army.
Yeah.
There were a couple that was like a 4-man superpower army. The Spire guys.
I don't remember what they're called, something or other.
And the problem with it, though, was that when you played it officially in a tournament, it had to be painted, it had to be 3-color. Okay, cool, whatever. Okay, that's fine. And then it had to be representative. So if your guy had a chainsword on the paper, the model had to have a chainsword. Because if your opponent looks at you and he has a little bitty bolter pistol, it's like, oh, well, I can charge the guy and not have to worry about it. Oh, by the way, my guy, it isn't a bolter pistol. It's a big-ass power sword, and I cut your ass in half. And so that's kind of why I had to do it. Thing is, whenever you played, your team changed. Because if you won or lost, you lost guys.
You got money and equipment.
Yeah. And it was very fluid and dynamic. So every time you played, if you were playing officially, you had to have an X-Acto knife glue and buy a thing of sprues. And you had to glue weapons on and chop them off. And I made sure that my guys never changed their weapons because I didn't have time
for
that crap.
I had the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's just such a pain in the ass.
It was more manageable at that scale.
Yes.
That few pieces.
Well, yes and no. It's like yeah, you had fewer pieces to handle, but every single game you had massive changes to your gang.
Might. You could choose to simply forego the gear and like, such.
That's what I did.
Yeah, I did that a lot, too. Mm. I very rarely changed out the gear on my guys for that exact reason.
I actually used all my money. I kept buying more guys. And then I bought Psykers and I bought Mercs. And
yeah, I was playing the guys that, if I remember right, I don't remember the gang name, but they were like,
the punks with the mohawks?
Yeah, they were like bald or had mohawks, and they all had like these weird like technical goggles. Yeah. They were like some kind of like tech cult. I don't remember the details.
No, I played the tech cult. They were guys in jumpsuits that were trying to
it wasn't that then, but yeah, they're more like punk guys.
Yeah,
like,
the guy had big mohawks.
But they all had like these like cybernetic goggles or something. Mm. I'm not sure what they were, but I don't remember.
Played Spire.
Well, of course.
Because they were the...
Yeah, because it was the cheese army.
Yeah, he lost a guy. A guy got severely wounded. He was so upset.
Because that's a big deal, because that carries over.
Because it carries over.
Yeah, that carries over.
My guys, if one of my guys got popped in the head and died, I just recruit another guy. Now, granted, I lose his experience and stuff, and I have a newbie.
Because that's the thing, is it had continuity.
Yeah.
What happened in one battle had an effect on the next battle. Mm-hmm. If somebody died, something happened. If they got wounded, they could have a permanent injury. Yeah. It actually even helped them. They could get like a cyber.
Yeah.
They're so scarred that people are afraid of them. Yeah. Now.
Or their arm gets blown off, but it gets replaced by a cybernetic arm that can crush people.
Yeah, it gets
people.
More powerful. Yeah. So that's some kind of cool stuff. All right. Go ahead.
So my story, I guess, with tabletop, was it?
Strategy
games. Now, I keep wanting to say role-playing games because that's what we do on this podcast. But, you know, strategy games stuff is, I really enjoy them. I really, really enjoy them. But I enjoy, like you guys, I enjoy playing them. I don't like the modeling. I don't like all that stuff. I don't like painting. I'm not very good at it. And I don't get an enjoyment out of it. Because a lot of people counter with, well, that's part of the game. Playing, moving the guys around, rolling the dice, marking off damage, winning and losing is part of the game. But also gluing the stuff together and modeling and painting, that is part of the hobby as well. And it's like, okay, I get that. But I don't enjoy the hobby. Mm-hmm. It's painful. It's tedious. It's pedantic. I don't like it.
Well, and as I bitched about before, my hands shake.
Yeah.
Some days worse than others. But I actually really tried when I was playing my Chaos Army. I really tried to do the base coat, mm-hmm. or whatever, primer.
Yeah.
I primered them all black and then was trying to paint on the colors and such. And it was really hard for me.
Yeah.
It was real. I mean, I could kind of do it. I mean, I'm not a great painter to begin with, but with my shaky hands and such, it was really difficult for
now,
me.
I played 40K for a bit. I don't know what year or what version I played, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. I played with my brother, my future brother-in-law, and his friends, and I think I played with you in Tex. I don't remember if I did or not.
I know at one point you and I went half and half on an army.
Yeah.
Like I'd give you half the Tyranids. One of us would play the Tyranid and the other would play the cult.
I played primarily a Gene Stealer cult army, and which you could do in the version. Now, it wasn't.
Yeah, you can't anymore.
It wasn't powerful. You know, you're never going to see anybody win a tournament with it. But I wasn't playing in tournaments. I was playing casual games and I was having fun. I liked it. That's what kind of killed it for me the first time, was a new edition got released.
Mm-hmm.
And with this new edition, the army that I was playing ceased to exist.
Yeah, they dropped the cult from the game completely.
Wow. You could not. There were specific units that, I mean, it wasn't just like you took human Imperial Guard and said, these are Gene Stealer cult guys. They had half human hybrid dudes.
They did have regular Imperial Guard as well that were considered to be at the very start of the transition.
Right.
But yeah, you're correct. Most of their units were either hybrids, which were mm-hmm. between human and Gene Stealer, or
Maguses.
Or they were like the Magus, which was a Psyker, or the Patriarch, which just oppresses women.
That's right.
The Patriarch, no, he was like a... He was a Psyker.
At least he had all the money. So.
He was a Psyker as well, but he was also really high-end. Yeah. Even within the Gene Stealers, he was a high-end hand-to-hand unit.
Take these units, and if you have no emotional bond to them, put them in the trash.
Yeah,
they're gone. You can't play them anymore. Unless you play a Classic, which nobody does, because it wasn't like, I'm playing First Edition. I'm going really... No, this is like 3 or something.
Well, on top of that, look who sponsors the competitions. They're all sponsored by Games Workshop.
Yeah.
You think they're going to sponsor the version of the game that requires not spending money?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And you know, people bitch about this because there was an army where you played the Space Dwarves in 40K. You played the Squats.
Squats, yeah.
Those haven't been in the game for years, and there's people who sunk megabucks into their squad.
And I think same edition. I think squats got dropped after second edition. Yeah. I believe it was the same time that they dropped the Gene Stealer Colts. Mm.
So that kind of, now, and granted, I didn't play the tournament scene, but the people I played with did. And so they worked to update all their armies and stuff. And I just couldn't play with them anymore unless I wanted to buy something new. And I was like, no, I'm going to do other stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kiss girls now.
Yep.
But that kind of like irritated me, but I wasn't like, oh my God, tabletop wargaming is so terrible. It's all about money because it's a business and how dare they make money. But I didn't play for a long time. And then again, I somehow, some reason that I don't remember, I got involved with the local War Machine scene. And I don't know if I got recruited or I stumbled in on it or what happened, but it involved Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And then through Dave, I met you and I met Josh. And I think we met Luke, too, through all that.
Yes.
And then we started a gaming group.
Yeah, because Luke played. Luke was playing, too. Luke's, at least for a while, he played War Machine, I'm pretty sure.
So when I hooked into it, it was a league apparently had just ended.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like sort of free play between the leagues ending and starting up.
Yep.
And this went on for some reason, went on for a couple months.
The leagues were sort of it was probably the first season of League.
Yeah.
Because before that, it was just basically free play and
people
would do a sponsored tournament, like a tournament. But the league was meant to be weekly play for whoever shows up at the game store. It was not a tournament. It's different.
It's different. It's just you play what you want. And there are scenarios, if you wanted, that were in the books. And Dave and I played quite a bit. And we played other people. And we had fun. And it was just people laughing and having fun. And mm-hmm. it was really cool. And it was learning the game. And in fact, we even made other variations of the game, too. Like, I made a scenario because they had this hill terrain. Mm-hmm. And then they had plastic soldiers. And the plastic soldier kits have an American flag. And so I made a capture the flag. You had to stand by the American flag and get points. And then you can knock people off the hill. And then you take the hill. And then you start getting points. And you have to hold. And I called it the Battle for America Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had an American flag on top. And that actually became pretty popular in the free play. We played it quite a bit as a fun scenario. And then everything changed because League started.
Yeah. And everybody got all serious about it.
Well, that's it. Because literally it was
serious fun.
It was. Oh, my God. And so League was every week.
Yeah.
You had a week to do the scenario. And basically your game store would get to choose one sanctioned day. They had one day of the week for official play. So you'd show up, and that was the day and the day they picked would be the day that the War Machine people would come to play.
Right.
So whatever that was. So you'd show up at the store, and that's all they would do.
I tell you,
you might get a game, or you might not, because
this is true of any form of competitive play. I don't care if we're talking about video games, card games, war games. If I am ever at a convention or something, and I'm supposed to play competitively against somebody, and I walk in, and they're serious and scowling and combing through the rules, I won't play.
I walk away.
I seriously will not play them. The last competitive game I played in was when Chris Ings did the Blood Name tournament at Fear the Con. And everybody, at least the people I played against, were super laid back. Mm-hmm. You know, we're laughing about it, giving each other tips. I mean, it was anything but serious. But, man, this is a game. These are all games. If you're going to get all bent out of shape,
I mean,
and winning really means that much to you, that's fine if you want to do that. But I don't.
People weren't holes.
Oh, I've certainly,
I've seen holes, you know, in that 40K situation. 40K
Magic,
before,
but, ooh, baby.
But, like, in the War Machine stuff, I don't think people were holes. But it's the tone of the evening shift.
Yeah. You know, they weren't, because I love the guys from War Machine. Yeah. I don't have a bad thing to say about any of them except for Dave. And, I love you, Dave. I'm Josh and I, you know that. They were great guys, but the league changed things. Like you're saying, it changed it. And
things
happened in league play that is the reason I don't play anymore. And it's some things that pissed me off, and some things that some of these people that I love as people, they fucking pissed me off. And I left the community because of that kind of shit. And it was league. It was the league that
did it. There was league drama, because it's people competing and it's high intensity. So there's drama. And that could be any, you could be talking about ping pong and there'd be the sort of level of drama.
Yeah, sure.
It's about attitude. I mean, how seriously do you take it? And if, I mean, once again, if you take this stuff real seriously, That's completely fine. That's your right. I don't care to play with you.
I showed up every week. I paid money for the books. I bought models. I even glued the models together, which is a big thing for me. And I played the trolls because I played hordes. And I bought somebody's trolls off of them, which were more or less painted. In the times between league, I showed up. I could play a game or two. I had about two games a night in me, and I would like to three at the most. I would play, and then I'd hang out, and I'd chitty-chat, and I'd talk, because I'm a real social guy. And then I'd play another one. Hey, you want to play? Yeah, let's play. And, you know, we play it, and then I'd hang out and stuff. But in league play, you can't do that.
No.
Because you're that f***ing game. You know, you're climbing that ladder. You've got to get your games in to get your ranking up to achieve the next level. And it's just like three games a night. No, man, you got to do four games a night.
Yes.
Solid. And people don't really have time. I mean, they talk, but the tone changed, and the fun I was having stopped. That's not War Machine's fault. I'm not blaming tabletop wargaming, and I'm not blaming the people in the community. You're putting a lot of money into this. You're putting a lot of time and effort to make your army, to paint them, to create them. You're putting time in to learn the rules. Some of these people are listening to podcasts and reading blogs on tactics and stuff. Some people are doing podcasts on it. So you need to play to justify the expenditure of those time and money resources. You need to play. You need to run your army to justify that, and to get the maximum amount of play going, that means league.
Yeah.
And for me, that wasn't why I was there.
Yeah.
I bought a pre-painted army, and Dave showed me how to play, and I was playing with friends and strangers who were friendly, and that was my fun. Yep. And people counter, when I tell them the story, they kind of, oh, well, you could play in your friend's basement. You know, it's just like, yeah, but the thing about that works in theory, but doesn't work in practice, because all the people are playing league games.
Exactly.
And so they kind of got their itch scratched at league night.
I think the only reason I lasted as long as I did in 40K, especially in my first run, which was second edition, was because there's about half a dozen of us who were already in the same gaming group, and most of us despised the group play scene. All we did was play each other.
Yeah.
We had our own little community. And Tex was playing Space Marines. I was playing Tyranid / Gene Stealer Cult. Tim was playing Orcs. Jim was playing Eldar. I don't remember the full run of it. I thought we had someone there playing IG. But the point is, that was what it was. You know, we didn't go anywhere else. Tex went to a few competitions or more organized play. Maybe there weren't tournaments or anything, but just more organized play stuff at a place called The Hobby Shop, which I think is now out of business.
Yep.
But he really didn't have positive experiences there. And so he mostly played either at his fraternity or back at home with us. And that was really it. And so we didn't have to deal with a lot of outside people. And none of us were interested in playing with anyone but each other. So that itch was being scratched nowhere else. We weren't out whoring ourselves around.
Right.
You know, we were very, very monogamous within our...
You know, I made it through an entire league. I participated in the league. I showed up every week. I didn't rank very well because I wasn't that good of a player. And the happiest point that I had was when league ended. League ended, and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome, because next week I get to play Battle for America Hill, which I haven't been able to do for months.
So you could have taken it one step further and done Iwo Jima. And, like, you have to be the first person to put up the flag while the reporter unit is present.
Yes.
And the reporter unit should just be like the 40K scatter dice. It just kind of wanders the play field. But you have to be the one at the top of America Hill when the reporter's there. And then you win the Iwo Jima. For anyone who doesn't know their history, look that up. You'll get it after you read Wikipedia.
Wikipedia had nothing.
All right. So let's hit the last game that I want to talk about here. Which is, and of course, there's a bunch of games we didn't talk about. I don't know.
What games have you guys played? Well, I mean, I've played 40K. I played Necromunda. I've played War Machine.
I guess it depends on exactly what you count as a war game.
I played that Mork and Gorka.
That
horrible game that replaced Necromunda, because people bought all the Necromunda stuff they were going to buy. So they said, not supporting Necromunda anymore.
It was like a racing or crash it
was like, okay, this is totally
so
not
let me throw
Necromunda.
In some of the ones that kind of count but may not depend on what you classify them as. Car Wars. Now there's an old one.
Yeah,
so many people remember Car Wars. Another one that comes to mind along that line would be Blood Bowl.
Yeah.
Now, Blood Bowl, of course, seems to be more popular now in video game form.
That's the only way I've played it.
I don't know if they still make the minis or not, but Blood Bowl was a strategy game. I don't know if you call it a tabletop war game. It's up to you. One I've never played is an entire category, which is the really traditional war games, where like the Napoleonic war games, where you have all this highly researched stuff for your
armies. Don and I call those 10 pounds of pewter.
Yeah,
and that's your army is 10 pounds of pewter.
Yeah, and you're supposed to be real highly researched about exactly how the rifles and field guns worked and all that stuff. And I've never played a game like that. I've seen them played. I have never personally played
a
game like
that. I knew a guy,
that.
The first time I went to college, there was a guy who was paying his way through college by painting miniatures for that. He had all these horses lined. He's a very good paint. He's like, I never play this. I have no interest in playing these games, but I love to paint.
And well,
he, and he,
paint,
he was good, and he people commissioned him.
Sure.
They said, here, I'll pay you X hundreds of dollars to paint this.
There were also the sort of cheaper ones, Mage Knight.
Yeah. I played Mage Knight.
A lot of the Clicks games
was,
in general.
I got to say, serious wargamers kind of poo-poo Mage Knight. I loved it. I really enjoyed the hell out of it, and I was very, very good at it.
And then we had this one. What is Pirates of the Cursed Sea? Is that the name of the game, or is that just the name of this expansion?
I think it is Pirates of the Cursed Sea.
Yeah, pocket model game. I think Pirates of the Cursed Sea. I can't remember if that's just the expansion name of it or not.
It may have been. I can't remember what it was called.
It is a pocket model game, and it is the Pirates one. It's the only one that mattered, anyway.
Yeah, where you played boats. I mean, this one was pretty cool. But now let's get to the last game that I want to talk about here.
Advanced Squad Leader.
No. Which is Battletech. Now, Battletech, I will concede, on its surface, is absolutely a tabletop war game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's why it doesn't feel like a tabletop war game to me. Why I don't categorize it with the rest. First of all, I have never played with anyone where modeling was a core part of the game. Yes, I've met people who really like to paint the figs. Mm-hmm. I met people who would even like do the trick where you put it in the oven to loosen them up and then bend them into different poses.
Oh, wow.
I've played with people who really got into terrain sculpting, and they would have really good 3D terrain that we would play on. But I have never played with anyone where they really started sweating me because that model's not exactly right, or it's not painted right. I mean, heck, I've played in games of Battletech, even outside of my own gaming group, where we were using the cardboard stand-ups from Reinforcements 2, which came out in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And people were fine with that. The entire tenor of the game, it seems to be much more about the game than it is about the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't seem to be the case in most war games. The other reason that I have trouble seeing it as a war game is because by the time that we got into Battletech, they had already put out now the second edition of their role-playing game, which was MechWarrior 2nd Edition. And it was not real hard to figure out how to combine the two games. We, as a group, unless we were at a con or something, we never played Battletech without also playing MechWarrior.
Right.
There was a character, the character had skills, and then at some point that character would get in a mech and fight a battle, but it was still that character. And we were able to do a pretty good job of mixing MechWarrior with Battletech such that there was not a huge distance between the two games. For example, little tricks like this. If there's an ambush on the field, if you have a perception test, I'll let you attempt to notice it. I handle initiative by having the two commanders make opposed tactics rolls against their tactics skill. As a MechWarrior 2nd Edition, I don't know where it is now, but as a MechWarrior 2nd Edition, there's actually a conversion you can figure out pretty easily just by looking through some of the books and doing a little bit of math on your own, that 20 points of damage in MechWarrior is equal to 1 point of damage in Battletech. Well, that does a pretty good job of letting you switch between the games. If a person is hit by a mech weapon, you know exactly what it did. If a person is using a heavy weapon that has stats in MechWarrior, well, if you roll the dice, divide it by 20, there you go. You know exactly what you did to anything on the battlefield. And so I think the presence of a role-playing game, both before, during, and after those battles, kept it from feeling like a true war game to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was never just put the pieces down according to point values. I mean, it was all story. There's no point values involved. Yes, it does have a point value system, but we never used it. It was just, you came on the field with this, the bad guys came on the field with that. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I concede it is a war game, But to me, it will never in my brain be filed under War Game. Yeah. It will always be filed as a tabletop strategy extension of a role-playing game.
There are people who have never played the role-playing game. And they have only played the tabletop war game.
I think they've missed out. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy both. But if somebody said, we're going to play a campaign, you got your choice. Either it's a persistent Battletech game where you never go to character, or it's a persistent MechWarrior game where we never go to the map, I would pick the latter.
Yeah.
The world is too interesting.
I did, too. From the very first time I ever played Battletech, it was a combination of that. I don't know that we necessarily used MechWarrior, but we role-played with it. I mean, we did the tabletop combat, but in between time, our pilots were out of their mechs, and we actually had a role-playing game going, too, in the world. Like I said, I don't remember that we used, like, the stats for things, but it was just when you're not in your mech blowing other robot arms off, you know, this is what we were doing. So
I think one of the other things that shaped my view of Battletech was how I was introduced to it. Before I had the tabletop game, I played the classic video game, the Kresnok's Inception. And when you play that game, while you don't per se create a character, you start off as a person, not as a mech.
Yeah.
And you actually role play, so to speak, as an individual in a training facility for the first several hours of the game before you actually break out into the world with a mech. And even once you have a mech, you will typically get more people in your party than you have mechs for them to pilot. And so at any given moment, you've got kind of this ragtag band of maybe half a dozen people, and two or three of them have mechs, but the rest are on foot with missile launchers or whatever. And so you saw a very human side of it. And many of the places you went, you would exit the mechs and talk to people and whatever. It was the mechs were the vehicle you took from place to place and to do combats on, but they weren't the crux of who you were.
The game was great back in the day. I don't think it's playable now.
Oh, I'm sure it's not, but I can think of a couple games, not many, where we did that in reverse. There was actually something I wanted to run for a while, never had a chance to, where the party would basically kind of be like, they start off kind of in this place between worlds. And from there, and I never worked out the details, but from there, somehow they're given tasks to go out and do things. But all these people, they would be statted out using minis rules for maybe 40K or who knows what game I pick. But you could basically play anything you want, provided we can find something comparable to stat it to. But we actually did that with Dave and all those guys for a little while. We were playing, I believe it was War Machine and Horde's characters. And it was a role-playing game. But when it came time for combat, the combat was done using the mini stats. And anything that was done in role-playing terms like skills or whatever was largely based on the stats on the little cards for the individual units. Like I was playing an ogre, and I don't remember who exactly what everyone was playing, but we turned the war game into a role-playing game.
That was just to give credit, that was Josh. Josh.
Oh, that was Josh. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That was Josh. All right. So
that was fun. It was a neat little experiment. Yeah. I played, speaking of games, because I have to mention this before you get away from Battletech, I played, and one of my favorite computer games that involved Battletech that I ever played was Mech Commander.
Oh, yes.
I love that. And the one thing that I remember from it, and for anyone that's played it, you should remember this. There's one sound clip. There's a sound bite that when you're in combat, one of the pilots, his favorite saying that you'd hear all the time was, he's swinging for the fences. And I don't remember who it was or anything else like that, but you'd be going along because it was a real-time strategy game.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically you could pause it or everything, but you're over the field moving your mechs around. So it really did for me. It's about as close of an approximation at the time that you could get to playing Battletech on a tabletop this way. So, you know, and so I enjoy that. But yeah, this one guy, he'd be out there. He'd be in the Vulture or whatever it was that I had him in. Not Vulture, but the missile. What's the missile barge?
Archer.
The Archer, yeah. And every once in a while, you just go, he's swinging for the fences. And just the way he said, I'm like, I love that. So nice little aside. Mech Commander.
I played Mech Commander 2.
I never played it.
I played Mech Commander 2. I don't play it.
I had both. I played 1 and 2.
Did you manage to capture the planners?
No, I didn't. I didn't finish it. That thing. I got stuck on a mission, I know. And I don't remember how far it was in the game.
May have been the clan mission. It was really freaking hard.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I couldn't get past it. It killed me.
I kept reloading until I beat it and took both of the clan pilots.
Save
alive.
Scummer.
Oh, total save scummer. I have no shame about it. All right, so let's talk about one more thing, and then we'll close this one out. Chad, you were talking about ratios of win to enjoyment, because I
figured out my magic number is what it was. I was telling Pat this because we were talking about getting beat by Dave.
Yes.
About how
a lot of people have this in common.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not a very exclusive club. No, it has a lot of members.
And for anyone who's not heard us talk about Dave before, to be clear, he's not a cheater.
Oh no.
Oh God, no.
Oh no, he doesn't have to be.
He's just that good.
He isn't lucky either. Yeah.
He plays on a whole different level than humanity.
Right. Yeah. He's attained this sort of gaming enlightenment.
A strategy game, and Dave gives you a recommendation, you should probably follow it.
Yes.
And if Dave recommends that you play against him, don't take that recommendation.
Yeah. If they're drawing up teams, just tackle Dave.
Yes.
And say, I'm on his team.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So anyway, we were talking about playing Dave, and we were talking about this Pirates game that I am holding in my hand because everyone can see that on podcast.
Yeah, of course.
The pocket model game WizKids did, Pirates of the Cursed Seas or whatever. And I said I wasn't going to say this. I think I've said it on air before, too, is the whole reason I got out of the game is because Dave beat us, like, a lot. Mm-hmm. And we were playing, and we were making the little boats with them. It's pirate boats. It's these cards, and you punch out the plastic pieces of the boat, and then you make 3D boats that are the size of maybe 3D6 put together. And then you sail them around. There's terrain, and then there's sea monsters, and there's rules for firing cannons at each other. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of fun. And we were playing. I thought it was pretty good. And, you know, having a good old time playing with all kind of different people. Dan played, and Pat played, and everybody played. And, of course, Dave got into it. And we started playing Dave regularly. And the boy just whooped our asses. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he is secret mutant power.
Oh, yeah.
Is that he's really good at this sort of thing.
Oh, boy, is he.
And it just kind of got to a point to where I'm like, I don't really want to play this game anymore. It's not that I don't want to play with Dave. I just don't want to play the game anymore because I can't do anything.
Yeah.
And the solution here would be to talk to Dave and say, Dave, why don't you let me win sometime? And that's not a solution.
But yeah, because that's not the kind of win you want.
No, absolutely.
And that's the thing. The whole thing, that's another big part for me with the whole tabletop strategy games and the war games and stuff like that, is you're always going to have different levels, skill levels of players.
Ability,
and obviously, like for me, I want to find people that are around my ability. You know, I want to play some people that I want them to be maybe a little bit better than I am so that I can learn.
Yes.
But I have a chance of winning, you know,
but
so
you
it's
can't
like, so I can hit maybe that 50-50 win rate, you know,
you can't pick the skill level.
No,
it's not
you
like
can't.
Levels written on the
right.
It's, now, what I found and I had this sort of this epiphany. I don't know if it's like a single epiphany, but I had this sort of growing realization of what I want. When I started playing World of Warcraft, I played a lot of PvP stuff. And so I was really thinking about like wins and losses and the ratios of wins to losses and that sort of thing. And then I started playing, I think it was Left 4 Dead. And I played a lot of Left 4 Dead. And I played Left 4 Dead 2. And I played a lot of competitive Left 4 Dead 2 with strangers on the internet and that sort of thing. And playing with my friends against strangers on the internet. And I think that tracked your win-loss ratio, if I'm not mistaken. And then so I started seeing exactly when I was losing and exactly when I was winning and where I was happy at. I am happy at a 45% or better win ratio. If I win 45% of my games, I'm perfectly happy.
Yeah, I might go a little lower than that. Say I'd be content winning about a third of my games, but I am absolutely with you. There is no joy in either winning all the time or losing all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Winning all the time is unchallenging and boring. Losing all the time, it's like, why did I even play?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the trouble that I've had as well, is really finding people at my skill level. Tex and I are a great match. I mean, because he and I both have very complementary intellects. We think in different ways. You know, I forget what's left brain and right brain, but, you know,
that's all bullshit.
Anyway. It is all bullshit. But it's still a useful conversation thing. But he's much more analytical, whereas I'm much more intuitive. But the point is that we were always...
You're much more handsome.
Oh, I know that. But we were always real well matched to each other. Mm-hmm. Chad, you and I are the same way. Yeah. We're always pretty well matched to each other. We have different approaches to things. But, you know...
In fact, our approaches to things are so different and complementary that it is better for us to be on the same team.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But I think my spread there is 1/3 to 2/3. If I am winning less than 1/3 of games, I'm just disheartened to the point I don't want to play.
Yeah, I mean,
if I'm winning more than 2/3 of my games, I'm not challenged anymore, and this is boring. I might as well just drop out and coach other people.
There's a magical point, too, where you can be losing quite a bit And then you say, well, at least I'm getting better. And so that there's hope of, there's a reason to continue to get better. But then there's also that break point where you're like, I'm losing. I'm not improving. I've stopped having fun. It's nobody's fault but my own.
Yeah.
And I think I'm just going to stop playing now.
Yeah, I could carry this on. And
I do like what you said, though, with the opposite side of the coin, where I have gotten so good and I'm winning so much, I've arrived. I might as well start coaching people. I got like that in Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah.
I actually played it so much, and I played with a group of people, and I got so good, and I was the best of the group of people I played, and I was better than 90% of the people I was playing against on the open internet for whatever reason. I just got really good at where I said, okay, I have gotten as good as I can possibly get. I'm not going to get any better, and it's not like I can go pro at this. So I'm done now.
Yeah.
I don't want to play anymore.
One closing thought on a somewhat related note, because I was thinking about how for me, the genre where I've gotten that way is non-twitchy RTSs. Mm-hmm. What I mean by non-twitchy is StarCraft is very twitchy. It's all about who can click the fastest.
Oh, yeah.
But if you talk about a game that plays a little more slowly,
it's not about strategy, it's about management.
Yeah, it is. But if you talk about the games that are more about strategy, once again, Dawn of War, some of the Command & Conquer games, I'm very good at them. Total Annihilation, mm-hmm. I'm undefeated in. And I did play that one a lot, both mm-hmm. with and against other people. And I don't know that I've ever lost a game of Total Annihilation.
Pat plays a little TA.
Mm-hmm. Probably a little TNA. But that got me to thinking about like other places where it's like, I've gotten so good at that, probably better off coaching people. And I only came up with one, and I didn't realize I had arrived until a particular moment. I was playing Final Fantasy XIV, mm-hmm. A Realm Reborn, the second edition of it.
Is that the MMO?
Yeah, it was actually pretty good. My biggest problem with that is I didn't have anybody to run with. I knew a lot of people mm-hmm. playing the game, but they were all in different guilds across different servers. Like, I couldn't find a cluster of people I knew and liked to play the game with. And so I ended up quitting the game, but I was playing a white mage, which is no surprise. I always play healers in these games. And I realized I had arrived when I was in a fairly large group. I don't remember what the group sizes were. I think it was like groups of four. And in like some of the bigger raids, you get like four mm-hmm. or five clusters of these groups of four together. And of course, you usually had a certain mix. You know, it was typically each group of four was one tank, two mm-hmm. DPS, one healer. And I was playing a raid. And we got to the final boss in the raid, and it is a marathon battle, and it is a hard battle. And I was just firing off heals and doing this and hitting my cooldowns and trying to figure out, okay, where can I maximize? And it was just, everybody's getting their ass kicked. I had an instant res I could kick off every so often. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to res people. And it just was chaos. And finally, we beat this guy. You know, half to two-thirds of the party's dead. The ones that are still up are barely up. But mm-hmm. damn it, the boss dropped, and it's over. And then one of the guys who was not from my guild, he was an outsider in this raids. I was playing a character named Winterfall. And he's like, good job with the heals, Winter, as I'm sitting there resurrecting people. I'm like, man, fuck you. You know, I did the best I could. Yeah. He's like, no, I'm not busting your balls. I'm being serious. You did really good.
You can never tell over the
internet. Well, no, all right. Here it comes. Here comes the part I didn't know, because this was all like complete chaos, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, two-thirds of you are dead. The ones that are up are almost dead. He's like, the other healers screwed up something in the prior event trigger. Mm-hmm. You're the only healer in here. I'm like, you're fucking with me. Really? And I checked the roster, and he was right. I was solo healing a raid group. And it was at that point I realized I have arrived.
Yeah.
Whatever it is a healer can be, I have become it.
You have achieved celestial and MMO healer.
Yeah,
status.
And my gear was not even that great. I mean, what I was doing on there, it was on skill. Pacing, I guess, of the mm-hmm. heals. So I said it was a marathon fight. But when he first said it, I was actually pretty pissed.
Yeah.
I thought he was being sarcastic. I'm like, dude, I did the best I could. I mean, whatever. It's a hard fight. And he's like, no, I'm serious, because you're the only guy here healing. I didn't believe him. I'm like, really? Anyway, random topics, but hey, it was a bonus episode. Once again, Sojourn 2, I hope you will pick up a copy. I believe you will pick up a copy, because it is a great book. I'm very proud to have it out there. I love Sojourn 1 and Sojourn 2. We've only upped our game, longer book, more authors, what I think is a really great collection of stories, including my personal favorite, Gnarl Saves Christmas. But that's not the only one. If you're follow Roddy Webb's
Vatoon.
Vatoon?
That's the name of the city.
Oh, it's Vatoon. You're right.
Hey, there you go.
All right.
Nice.
That only took a year and a half.
Nah, very good, Chad.
That's a rare one. You usually don't remember proper nouns at all.
Yeah, I know, right?
It was Vatoon. In the story, I called it Tarn's Hold because I had no idea what it was.
Your name's better. Vatoon was one I just kind of...
Well, I don't know. I have to decide. If I continue that, what do I call it? And then also, if you want to talk to Gnarl, he now has his own Twitter account. I'm also thinking about starting a web series for Gnarl, but I need to get a custom Gnoll puppet, but I found someone that makes them. So I'm thinking Gnarl needs his own, like, monster piece theater, but I've got to figure out how it's going to work. So anyway... Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week, great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.